You were just responsible for getting your butt home. Now you have to do the same thing for yourself, but for the other firefighters that you're responsible for. And then you're responsible to their families and accountable to their families as well. The best practice for a promotional exam is to take the test, even if you don't think you want it, even if you don't think you're ready. To be successful in this job, or anywhere for that matter, you have to have someone to kind of take you under their wing. I'm here as a supervisor, not because I know more than you. I just happen to score better on the promotion exam. We know that. If there's somebody that you have in your mind as the ideal leader, right, ideal captain or battalion chief or whatever position that you're going to be looking to attain, then you just have to start acting like that person.
Welcome to another episode of Respond to Resilience, along with Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Al Pratz. He's the Deputy Chief and Chief of Special Operations at North Hudson Regional Fire and Rescue. We'll be talking about the promotional process and its direct relation to mental and emotional health. We invite you to like and subscribe, YouTube, Respond to Resilience, Facebook, Responder TV, and Responder Wellness, Inc., UPSradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Chief Pratz after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts, retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Our guest today is Alita Pratz. He's a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, and he served in the North Hudson Regional Fire and Rescue in New Jersey since 2004. He's risen quickly through the ranks by scoring at the top of each of his promotional lists. Chief Pratz became a captain in 2010, a battalion chief in 2017, and then was promoted to deputy chief in 2022. He is North Hudson's Chief of Special Operations Command, as well as the department's training division chief, and he serves as a member of the UASI Metro USAR command staff and is New Jersey Division of Fire Safety subject matter expert in fire service active shooter response. And if that isn't enough, he's also written articles in Fire Engineering magazine. Chief, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm super excited and I'm honored to be here. You guys are doing great things with your podcast, and I'm just honored to be sitting in this panel. Thank you.
Thank you. We're happy you're here too.
Al, we usually like to start with some perspective on how you got to where you are today. So why did you choose to enter the fire service?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was luck. It was a little bit of luck, a little bit of fate. I was studying criminal justice in college, and I wanted to be a police officer. And I was actually a juvenile detention officer working with a Morris County Juvenile Detention Center. And my whole idea was to just be a cop, and I wanted to take the police officer exam. So I don't have to wake up every single day and go to jail, which is what you're doing. And working with the juvenile population was extremely, extremely stressful. But it did have its positives, and it was rewarding for me. But I knew I wanted to be a police officer. So I was taking the police officer exams, and I wasn't scoring all that well. I was just doing well enough to pass the exam. But in New Jersey, and I'm sure it's the same everywhere else, it's a very competitive job. It's very difficult because you have a lot of applicants that are looking to become police officers and firefighters. And so I was told that the fire department test was coming up. Actually, my wife is the one that called me and said, babe, you should take the the fire department test. And I said, why would I want to do that? I said, I'm studying criminal justice. I want to be a cop. Her uncle was who is now a retired a deputy chief in Passaic, New Jersey. He said, tell Al to take the test. And if he really wants to become a police officer, at least he's in the pension system and he can transfer over if he does well enough in the police test after. And so that was my plan. And in fact, 2 days before I got sworn in to the fire department, I still took the police test thinking that I was going to transfer over. I took my fire department exam. I scored very well. I was hired on the first round. I was off to the fire academy, and within a couple weeks of being in the academy, I fell in love with the job. I really fell in love with the training. I fell in love with being able to face certain fears and not knowing how my body and my mind was going to react to it, and then realizing that I was able to overcome it. There was a big difference that I saw between law enforcement and the fire service. And for me, what that was the teamwork element of the fire service. It was more, felt like more of a brotherhood. It felt like more of a family environment. And that's something that I definitely fell in love with. I graduated the fire academy, and now I'm a firefighter working in West New York, New Jersey, working on one of the busiest engine companies. One day I'm at home with my wife and I receive in the mail the certification for the police department. The test that I took 2 days before I got sworn into the fire department, I scored very well. And I said, wow, look at this. You know, now I have options. And, mm-hmm. You know, I looked at my wife and she looked at me and she says, do we really have options? I mean, we know what you're going to do. We know you're not going, right? You know you're staying with, because I totally forgot that I even took the exam, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
With you. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot, and which is crazy to think that all my life I wanted to be a police officer. Mm-hmm. And then now, you know, not even 2 or 3 months out of the fire academy, I completely forgot that I even took the police exam. What you're supposed to do is respond to the certification and let them know whether or not you want the position, right? Because there are many people just waiting in line for somebody to turn the job down. Mm-hmm. I didn't, and I forgot to do that. And it wasn't until one night my doorbell rings, and I go downstairs, I open up the door, and there's a police sergeant. He says, are you out of there, Prats? And I said, yes, sir. Is everything okay? He says, yeah, you're on the civil service list and you didn't respond to the, you know, to the letter. And we were just following up. And the reason it wasn't that they were following up because they're hurting for, you know, for applicants, but it was because a lot of times, people fake their addresses because they want to be hired by a certain department. And they were following up to see whether or not they actually lived there so they could remove me from the list. But he looks down. I was wearing a fire department T-shirt, and he sees the Maltese crossing. And I said, "Yeah, I'm on the job with FD now." He says, "Oh," he goes, "Congratulations, you got the better job." He goes, "Good luck to you," you know. And that was it. And so, you know, it was something that it found me. The fire service found me because, like I said, I wasn't looking for that job to be a firefighter, but it was something that I definitely fell in love with. And you know, ever since I just been all in with this. With this career, with this job. I love it. It's a calling.
Ready to improve your fundraising efforts and elevate your organization's communications through direct mail with Ari Lawler? Let Ari Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. With a proven track record of assisting fire departments, police unions, PBAs, churches, schools, and more, and raising much-needed funds through unique strategies and expertise. Technologically advanced, their production line and personnel are experts in navigating all the latest postal service regulations and mail requirements. Simply put, Ari Lawler will save you money on your next fundraising campaign. With over 35 years of experience, Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing are leaders in fundraising through direct mail. They too are first responders and understand your needs better than any other direct mail marketing company. And they are a family business who take pride in offering their clients the finest service at the most competitive rates. Experts in design, print, and mail, they do it all, and they get results. Experience the Ari Lawler difference. Check out their website, arilawler.com, or give them a call today. Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing. Raising money has never been so easy.
I love that saying, the fire service found me, because I think some of us in the other branches, we feel the same way. Yeah, I feel that way about EMS for sure. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what led you to a leadership role in your department. So here you are falling in love with this profession. You get on the job, you're working hard. What led you to that point?
Well, I think that every job that I've had some type of leadership position. It was something that for me always sort of came natural to me. I was, prior to being in the corrections, I was a U.S. Marine. I was in the reserves. So after high school, I went into the Marine Corps. And that kind of catapulted me towards, you know, wanting to or feeling the need to lead others. And I never really looked at it as that I was looking to lead others. It was just something that it felt right to me. And, you know, I don't know if it was because I grew up in a single family household and it was just my mother that raised us. And early on in my childhood, I had to kind of help out in the house and sort of be a leader in my house and be the man in the house, so to speak. I don't know if it was that, but I remember when I saw the Marine Corps recruiter come into the high school and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with my future. And I seen the presence that this Marine Corps recruiter had. And I said, wow, mm-hmm. That's very impressive. He comes across, you know, and everybody knows the Marine Corps uniform is one of the sharpest out there. And so, you know, from there on, I was a sergeant in the Marines. I ended up as a sergeant in the Marines. And when I was in corrections, I was a sergeant. In corrections, I started the gang intelligence unit in Morris County Juvenile Detention Center. So, you know, so for me, as you know, becoming a firefighter and, you know, being in the academy and you know, being on a very busy engine and seeing what effect my captain had on me as far as him having that leadership role and then molding me into what he felt was the ideal firefighter, right? Taking his time to train me, taking his time to go out of his way to make sure that I understood fire behavior, building construction. I mean, at routine calls or even at fires, we would spend an extra 20, 30 minutes at the scene. I mean, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and for a probie, that's great. You want that. Now, some of the senior guys, I would look over at them and they would roll their eyes like, oh, here we go. You know, we're going to spend an extra 20 minutes here when they just want to, you know, wrap up and go back to the firehouse. Right. Yeah. But as for a new guy, I was just soaking it all in. And, and then when we would kind of bounce around a little bit in our training for the first year, so you can have exposure to different types of companies, an engine company, ladder rescue, right. Different things and be able to work in some of the different cities that we cover. So that you can also get an understanding of the layouts of the streets of, you know, different cities and towns. I worked with some other company officers that weren't as strong as far as leadership goes. So I kind of learned that, you know, to be successful in this job or anywhere for that matter, right, you have to have someone to kind of take you under their wing and show you the ropes and show you the right way. And then so that's something that you learn from. But and then you also should learn from the leaders that are not as strong. And when I say leaders, that's not really leading, right? We're just talking about a supervisor or a boss at that point, right? So you learn the good and the bad based off of the experiences that you have with different officers. And so I knew that I wanted to be able to have that same kind of effect on new firefighters as they came through the fire service or came through, you know, our fire department. And I felt it was important because there's nothing more important in the fire service, in my opinion, than training and preparedness, because, you know, that's how we get our job done. That's how we keep ourselves and each other safe, is by training. You know, I just felt that was something that I wanted to be a part of, and I wanted to do my part and kind of pay back and give back the way that Captain Ballister did for me. I wanted to be able to do that in return for other firefighters as well. I just didn't know how far I was going to go and that I was going to continue rising up the ranks.
It's so great that you're using kind of the both ends of the spectrum, you know, the good leader and the, you know, the poor leader, or just the person that's a supervisor and not a leader. When I was going through my oral boards for promotion to lieutenant, one of the questions they asked was, you know, name three things that you learned from, or positive things you learned from a leader, and then sort of negative takeaways you had. And it is true that the two are important to kind of shape how you're going to become a leader yourself. You can learn from both of them. So how did you kind of deal with challenges that you faced when you were preparing and for promotion and then after becoming promoted?
So for me, when I started studying for the promotional exam, I was so young on the job. I mean, I was in my third year. And so civil service rules in New Jersey is that you have to have 3 years on the fire department before you're eligible to take the promotional exam. Now, timing is everything sometimes. And so it just so happened that when that list or that test was coming out, it was right at the moment where I had just enough time. I mean, I made the list by 10 days. I made the cut to be able to take the promotional exam just by 10 days. So, you know, in your third year, you're still learning. In fact, you know, I'm in my 20th year and I'm still learning, right? So in your third year, there's a lot to be learned yet, right? You haven't had experience everywhere, meaning you haven't necessarily worked on every single piece of apparatus, maybe an engine ladder, rescue company. Maybe you haven't worked in some of the busiest. I was fortunate enough to always be on one of the busiest companies. But, you know, not everyone has that same experience. So for me, when I decided to take the promotional exam, at first it was really about learning about, you know, I realized that there was a large bibliography that you had to get through. Right. There were a lot of different books, books that covered building construction strategies and tactics, you know, and so I knew that I can supplement what I was learning in the firehouse with, you know, my real world experience with what's in the books. And so I decided to take the promotional exam so I can further my education in the fire service. I really wasn't taking it seriously in the sense that I said, you know what, I have to get promoted right away because I had so much time left. I wasn't in a rush to get promoted. Like I said, it was really just about furthering my education. And then as I started reading the books and started learning about building construction and fire tactics and behavior, and then we would go out into the street and go to alarm activations, go to fires, and then I would actually see what I was reading and understand that I could put, you know, make that connection between what I'm reading and what we're actually doing out in the street. I felt like I was operating a little bit safer. I had a heightened sense of awareness. And I said, wow, this is really something to this here. And one day I'm studying in the firehouse kitchen late at night. And even though I had 3 years on, I was still the rookie in the house because, you know, we just hadn't hired new guys at the time. And I remember being in the firehouse kitchen and I would always wait for everyone to go to bed. I would mop up, clean up the kitchen, put the dishes away, do all that stuff, right? And I knew that I had to wake up early and make the coffee, and that's what the rookie does, right? And then I opened up my books and I sat down and I started reading, and there was a firefighter that ended up coming into the kitchen to get some water or something, and he looks over at me and says, "Prats, what are you doing?" I said, "What?" He goes, "Are you studying? Are you taking the test?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I applied for the test. I'm going to take it, give it a shot, see what happens." And you know, I kind of felt that if you're going to, the best practice for a promotional exam, and I still say this today, the best practice for a promotional exam is to take the test. Even if you don't think you want it, even if you don't think you're ready, you're better off always taking a promotional exam, because when you're ready, then you have the experience of taking a promotional exam.
Sure.
So, so that was my idea, but he turns to me and says, he's something like, "Hey kid, you have 2 days on the job. You don't know you're this from that, right? I'm not going to say it on the platform." Yeah. And tell a Marine that he can't or she can't do something, right?
Yeah.
And right. So at that point, I said, "All right, I'm going to show this guy." And so then that's when I kind of kicked it into high gear on my studying, and it went from just reading the books and highlighting a couple of things here and there to reading the books, highlighting, typing what I highlighted, creating my own Cliff Notes version of what I highlighted. And then I would record myself reading it. And then I would listen to it on my way home or on my way to work.
Wow.
And so that's how I started kind of absorbing all the material. And that's kind of like what got me started to be able to start moving in that direction that I was going to get ready to take the exams. And then I realized something very important is that it's not just the promotion and it's not just studying, but are you doing it for the right reason? Right. Mm-hmm. Are you looking to promote for the right reasons? And you know, that's different for everybody. So I don't think there's really a right and wrong, but you have to know what your reason is, what your truth is, as far as why you want to promote. And then you have to have an understanding that it's going to change for you, because now you're not just riding the back step responsible for yourself. Now you're responsible for other people, other firefighters, right? You're responsible to make sure that the job gets done. You're responsible to make sure that the fire goes out and people get saved. And that's a huge responsibility. And there's a lot of accountability that comes with that. And if you're not willing and ready to accept that, and if you haven't prepared your mind mentally, right? If you haven't prepared yourself mentally and emotionally to possibly take that leadership role, then you need to take a second look and really reconsider whether or not promotion is right for you at that moment.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit, and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen a leader who's tactically proficient, but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fireground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fireground.
It's an interesting point you make, because I feel we often hear people going for promotions for more money, but I think a lot of times the part that you just said is left out of the conversation. You know, are you ready to be responsible for everyone under you? Because that responsibility is great. I've felt it myself. It is much greater than when you're just in the back alone.
Right. Yeah. I won't lie to you. The money's great. And at the time I was, you know, I started the job and everyone, most of the guys in the group that I was hired with were single firefighters. Most of the group were single firefighters, where that wasn't my case. I had a family already. And in fact, when I left corrections to take the job with the fire department, I took a huge pay cut where I had to, it was such a big pay cut that I had to cash out my pension, whatever my pension contributions were at that time, to be able to use that money to pay bills and kind of keep us above water for that first year or year and a half, where, you know, we weren't making that much money. So I had to take a huge pay cut to make that. So it is something when you have a family, it's definitely a reason, right? It's definitely a valid reason, because you have to do what's right for your family. But if you're not willing to accept everything that comes along with it, then you really have to be careful, because it's not just you anymore. It's them, right? And you really have to be willing to accept that. And, you know, not everyone is a natural. I think there are people out there that are natural leaders and it comes easy to them. But if you know that you're not that person, that maybe it just doesn't come naturally to you, then study it, read it, right? There are a lot of people out there that there's leadership podcasts, there are books. I saw the when you guys had Frank Lieb, I actually won a copy. When you had him on, you had a copy, right? You sign up and see if you get a free copy. I actually won a copy of his book.
That's how we got connected, I think, in the first place, right?
Absolutely. But yeah, so what I'm trying to say is basically know your why. And if there's a gap there, then you got to fill that gap, and you have to go above and beyond to make sure that you do that, because it's extremely important to keep the brothers and sisters safe.
Al, once you promoted, what were some of the challenges that you faced that you didn't anticipate?
So imagine. So, you know, I'm in my 20th year now, and so I was a lot younger looking than I am now. And there were firefighters that, when the promotional list came out, you know, we're about a 300 and somewhat man department. And we have four shifts. We do 24/72s. So the shift that's opposite of yours, sometimes, unless you're working a mutual, you don't really see those guys that much. And so when the promotional list came out, I remember people saying, who the hell is Pratts? Like, who is this? Like, who's this guy that's about to be a captain? Like, we'd never even met this guy, right? So, that's definitely a challenge that you have. There's a lot that you have to prove, and you have to understand that there is, right? You do have to prove yourself. I believe you're only as good as your last fire, right? Or you're only as good as the last incident or situation that you've dealt with. And in the fire service, it's extremely hard to build a good reputation, but it's easy to build a bad reputation, right? So I knew that there was a lot of work that I needed to do. Luckily, at the time, the tour commander, the deputy chief, when I was assigned to his shift, he assigned me to the same firehouse that he rides out of. And as the captain, there were three firefighters that were assigned to me. But I always say that it was like if I was assigned to them, right, the other way around, because these firefighters were senior firefighters with much more time on the job than I had, a lot more experience than I had, a lot older, right, salty looking, you know, guys. And so these were, you know, firefighters that now I'm responsible to supervise, right? And so I remember the very first day walking into the firehouse in my crispy, you know, new captain shirt and, you know, I walk in, and of course you never go anywhere with your arms swinging, meaning you better be carrying a box of pastries or something like that, right? You're going to a new station. Don't show up with your arms swinging or something that we didn't. And if you work overtime, by the way, and you show up on overtime, you come in with your arms swinging, they're going to send you right back out the door and come back with a sizable, a dessert. So I walked in and I had my dessert. I forget what it was, whatever it was. I had it and I walked into the firehouse and these guys are looking at me and they're just smiling and they're like, oh boy, you're in for it now. And these guys that I worked with, they were some of the biggest chop busters on the job, and I got my chops busted pretty good. But that's good, because you know, in the fire service, if they're busting your chops, then they like you, and if they're kind of not talking to you, then that's a problem, right?
Right.
But now I'm responsible for these firefighters that have more time on the job than I do. What I did was I walked in on day one and I said, listen, you know, I'm excited to be working with you guys. And I'm here as a supervisor, not because I know more than you. I just happen to score better on the promotional exam. We know that, right? That's what we're going to do is we're going to go out and train as much as possible, because it's not me training you, it's us training each other. You guys are going to, I want to learn from your experiences, right? And then together, we're going to make sure that, you know, we keep each other safe. That we're aggressive as firefighters, right? We're going to put fires out. And it was a very busy engine company, right? Uh-huh. You know, in Union City, and we were going to fires. So, being able to overcome that, I don't want to call it a stigma, but being able to overcome the fact that you're such a new firefighter on the job and now you're catapulted into this leadership position. If you don't address it properly and if you don't take those steps to be able to have that conversation with your crew and let them understand that you're humble, let them understand that you're there for them, right? Because as supervisors and especially the higher up you move up the ranks, the more responsibility you have to the men and women. So, you know, I wanted them to know where I was coming from and that I wasn't looking to, you know, step in there and change everything. I was looking in there, I was looking to come in and make things run smoothly for us to be able to make things run smoothly together.
Right. Right.
And just do our job and that's it. And it worked and it did, you know, so we had a good time. It was a great crew. And ever since then, those firefighters that I worked with, are now they're both, battalion chiefs. It was funny. I went to one of their home. They invited me to their house and it was, I forget what event it was, but we were there. It was a family gathering. One of the family members of one of the firefighters says, "That's your captain? That young kid is your captain?" Seriously. And they've moved up the ranks and you know they're excellent guys, and I love them very much.
Well, thanks for sharing all of that. So you know that a huge part of our mission on the podcast is talking about mental health and the awareness of such. What are some of the emotional and mental health issues you've seen in your department and in others that you've worked closely with?
So since 9/11 in New Jersey, we've most of the firefighters that have been hired in the state of New Jersey are military veterans. And as we know, we all know that military veterans and first responders have the unfortunately highest rate of suicide. So it's like we have this perfect storm brewing right across in the fire service in New Jersey. And I would imagine it's anywhere else too, because of, you know, we're still dealing with veterans that are coming back and, you know, in New Jersey, if you're a military veteran, you get veterans preference. And so you have a better chance of being hired. So the majority of the firefighters that we're going to hire are going to be military veterans. And they're already dealing with their own issues that they've seen things overseas and they've been exposed to traumatic incidents. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times obviously, to get on the job in the fire department, you go through certain steps. You have to take a physical examination, psychological. And I believe that what happens is, or what I think happens is, you're exposed to certain things and either you suppress it or you learn how to deal with it and you speak to a therapist and you overcome these issues. But they're always there underneath the surface. And then you take a job with whether it's police or fire. And then there are certain things that you're exposed to on the fire ground, right, that are triggers and kind of bring these things back. So and the reason I bring that up is because unfortunately, we've had our share of firefighter suicides, firefighters that have lost their jobs because of alcohol and substance abuse. Mm-hmm. Firefighters that unfortunately have passed away due to overdose. Yeah, I don't want to use numbers, but a good majority of these firefighters are also military veterans. Mm-hmm. So I think that there has definitely been an issue, and it's gotten better in the sense that now there's a heightened sense of awareness. The conversation's being had. I think that for us in particular, the stigma of mental health, of having issues or, you know, not being able to talk about your feelings, that all that stuff has kind of going away. And we're having open conversations about it, particularly in North Hudson. In New Jersey, we've moved towards, you know, the peer support, right, which has worked very well for us, because in the fire service, it's hard for us as firefighters to listen to someone else that doesn't have the same experiences that we have and haven't been there. So we're having peer support and having firefighters, our own firefighters, work with firefighters from other locals, other departments, to be able to have this peer support program that we can lend these peer support personnel to each other. Right. I think has been extremely helpful as well. But I think that there's still a lot more work that needs to be done. But the good news is that we're having a discussion and we're moving in that direction.
You're dragging, O'Malley. Let's go.
Oh, hey, it's me. The subtle and persistent changes in your health that you've had for 2 weeks. I'm here to slow you down.
What's up, O'Malley? 20 push-ups is usually no sweat for you.
You can try to ignore me, but I'm not going anywhere.
Come on, O'Malley.
Uh-oh, looks like someone's feeling tired.
I'm fine.
Subtle and persistent changes in your health, you know, like fatigue, can be an early warning sign of cancer. So don't be a dummy and ignore it. Right, O'Malley? O'Malley? O'Malley?
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Speaking about awareness, we've done resiliency training to be able to give our firefighters the tools to be able to understand what they're feeling and understand how their bodies or their minds might react to certain stressors. So, you know, I believe that in New Jersey, we are moving in the right direction. I mean, we've even done in the North Hudson firefighters unions have gotten together and developed mental health T-shirts for Mental Health Month, right? So firefighters are wearing the T-shirts. It's raising awareness. We're having a discussion. We're talking about it, and I think that's how these things start, right? Just opening up the lines of communications and saying, you know what, it's okay to talk about these things, right? Not only is it okay, but it's something that we have to do, right? We have to have these discussions because it is affecting us in a negative way, obviously. You know, not just affecting us at work, but how we deal with our spouses at home, our family members, and You know, and it's not just the traumatic stress that we face every day as part of our jobs, but also things that we're exposed to at home that affect us right at work too. So, you know, understanding that there's all these different stressors that are attacking us, right, or coming at us as firefighters. And a lot of times we feel that we're the heroes and we're not supposed to ask for help. And we're supposed to be the ones that are supposed to be out there helping everyone else. And if I need help, then how am I going to help other people? But, you know, understanding that we're human first, right? Before we're firefighters and we're fathers and sons and, you know, daughters and wives, we're human first. And I don't care where you work or what you do, what your experience is. We're all susceptible to these stressors, you know. So I don't know if that I think I kind of went off on a tangent a little bit, but I hope that answered your question. If not, I apologize.
No, we love our tangents, and it did. It gave us a good snapshot. And, you know, in Connecticut, we're following the peer support model as well. So it's nice just to see it spreading more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've been, like I said, so it's been. Resiliency training is something that we've done throughout New Jersey. So throughout New Jersey, we've done the resiliency training. In fact, it's been something that was funded through the UASI, which is the Urban Area Search Initiative. So after 9/11, the Urban Area Search, Security Initiative put together these, different regionalized response groups or teams for urban search and rescue, which is I sit on the committee for that. But there's a Seaburn committee for that as well. But what they've done is they've worked with the hospitals to be able to deliver the Natal. It's a Natal of resiliency program that was born out of overseas, I believe, in Israel with the soldiers. And so that Natal's resiliency program was kind of adopted by the UASI, and then they funded the program and they kind of spit it out to all the different fire departments that were looking to participate. And we were one of them where we were able to get the resiliency training done in-house for our firefighters. And then there's a web version of it as well that we're going to start having the rest of our firefighters, and especially the new guys that we've hired, go through this resiliency program as well. So we have that going. We have the peer support model, which is huge. Obviously, the department's EAP and the doctors through workers' comp that you can go to. But also different resources that we've had, different therapists and different agencies that are out there that are willing to work, not just willing, but want to work with first responders, come in and talk to our personnel, talk to our firefighters. And then every time that I get an article, like if you guys put something out or if I see something out there that's mental health and I think it's good, I usually kind of send that out to the entire department. I'll type up a quick synopsis of what it is with a copy of the article and push it out. And to the point where I think that, you know, that they're ignoring my emails, but every now and then I'll get a call from somebody and say, hey, I really like this program. It made a difference for me, or, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about this, and how can you, point me in the right direction? You know, I've even spoken to Dave about the 22-0, and I've gotten firefighters, linked up with 22-0 as well. And so, the good thing is that when we talk about this, it's not like, we're not going to talk about it. They're open to the discussion, and not only are they open to the discussion, but they're accepting it and they want it, something that they want, that they're asking for. Well, maybe not asking for it, but they're definitely thinking about it. And it's something that's well received.
Well, I have to just acknowledge, you know, what you're bringing as a leader, not only with your organizational and fire ground skills, but also by advocating for mental health the way you do. Right. We've had a few conversations about a couple other tools out there, which, you know, will potentially help your members. And it is just so wonderful to see a leader who wants to embrace that and do whatever is necessary and whatever is possible to improve the mental health and wellness of the membership of your department. So I just wanted to say, it's really impressive.
Thank you. I mean, it's really been helping me as well, because, you know, I have my share of, things that bother me, my share of triggers that things that I've seen and things that I've dealt with. And, I realize it's like if you have a class that you're teaching and you ask that question, right? Who has any questions? There are no stupid questions. If you're thinking about something, that means someone else is thinking about it too. So when it comes to mental health, in my opinion, like if you're feeling something, or if you're, you have something, certain vulnerabilities, or if you have, there's certain triggers out there, then chances are someone has that same thing as well. We're all kind of like-minded individuals in the fire service, A-type personality. There's a reason why we joined the fire service, right? We want to help others. We're a little nuts, right? Because you do have to be a little nut, a little bit nuts to run into a burning building when everybody else is running out. And my wife always says to me, she goes, I think you're a little extra nuts, because I've always wanted to be on like special operations. Like I wasn't happy if I wasn't like on a piece of rope hanging off the side of a building or something as a firefighter. And one of the things that I struggled with moving up the ranks was knowing that I wasn't going to be as hands-on as I was.
Yeah.
And that was something that she said to me. She goes, you're never going to move past captain, because there's no way that you're not going to be, you know, in the shit, right? You're not going to not be in it with the guys. But I realized that in order for me to be able to help more and have more of an impact on more firefighters, then I had to move up the ranks so that I had a broader reach and had a little bit more leeway from administration to be able to get things done and make things happen than if I was just to stay at the rank of captain. So it's therapeutic for me too to do these kind of things. So you know, a little bit of selfishness, I guess, when it comes to that. So
great to hear it. And I just wanted to make sure we cover more of the promotional process, because that is certainly one of your expertise is let's talk about preparation. Earlier, you were speaking about how you totally immersed yourself when you were getting ready to test for captain. So how do you prepare for the promotional process?
So I think one of the biggest things is, like I said before, is knowing what your reason is, right? And I think you have to be true to yourself and understand why you want to promote and obviously understand what comes along with the promotion. Right, not just the administrative responsibilities and duties, but also the human impact that you're going to have with those firefighters that you can potentially start supervising. Right. Mm-hmm. Now it's like you were just responsible for getting your butt home. Now you have to do the same thing for yourself, but for the other firefighters that you're responsible for. And then you're responsible to their families and accountable to their families as well. Right. Because if something happens with one, if I'm a cap, regardless of what the rank is, if something happens to one of my firefighters and it's because we didn't train properly or I didn't prepare them enough or I didn't make sure that they were wearing the gear properly or whatever the case is, then I'm accountable to their families as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because it's, as a leader and as a supervisor, especially the higher up you go in rank, you're that much more accountable. So you have to understand that. And if you're not that person, then you have to make yourself that person. And the best way to, in my opinion, the best way to work in that direction is to start doing what those types of people do, right? So if, you know, if there's somebody that you have in your mind as the ideal leader, right, ideal captain or battalion chief or whatever position that you're going to be looking to attain, then you just have to start acting like that person. You have to start acting like in that capacity. Like we also, in addition to the promotional testing, we also do promotional prep. We train, you know, we teach civilians how to take the how to take the fire department exam, right? Because there's a science to it. And one of the biggest parts or components of the fire department exam is the personality testing and the bio data. So when they're asking you about yourself and about whether or not you have the right personality that it takes to become a firefighter, that weighs so much more heavily than grammar or math or, you know, or how to read a map or spatial orientation or something like that. So it's about personality. And the reason is because it takes a special kind of person to do this job, and not just do the job, but to do it successfully. Mm-hmm. Right. So we tell, you know, the young kids that are taking the fire department exam, if you want to do this job, then start living like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Start acting like what you know a firefighter should act like. Right. The person that you would want showing up at your house at 3 o'clock in the morning if your house was on fire and your kids were trapped right above the fire. Be that. How do you become that person? Start acting like them. Right. So, you know, empathy, you know, leadership skills, decisiveness, you know, just being a good person overall, right? Being honest. So these kinds of things we tell to anyone taking the entry level exams. And then the same thing would apply with the promotional. So you have to figure out how are you going to become that person. And then you have to understand what is it going to take for you to be successful in the actual exam itself, right? Because one thing is being successful with the exam, and the other thing is being successful on the job once you reach that position, right? Understanding that it's a sacrifice. And what I mean by that, it's a time, you have to sacrifice a lot of time. And if you're a family man like I was, you have to sacrifice family time, and you have to have that conversation with your family and say, listen, you know, this is the decision that we're going to make as a family, right? Hopefully it's a family decision, right? It makes things a lot easier if you, especially if your wife's on board. If she's not on board, forget about it. You're just not going to do it. I mean, that's my household anyway. Reason why you want to know the reason why I moved up the ranks so quickly is because at home, I'm not in charge of anything. At home, I'm like, I'm the probie, and I'm still the probie at home. We've been married 22 years, but at work, I'm in charge. So that's why, no, So you have to have that conversation, and you have to understand that everyone has to be all in and understand that there's a time sacrifice. Sometimes it's a financial sacrifice, especially if you're going to pay for classes and tutoring and that sort of thing, because sometimes that might be your only chance of promotion, and you have to kind of go all in. So understanding that you have to lay the groundwork, and you have to spend some time studying and reading. You have people that may not be well-read or may not have great reading comprehension, and have to, you know, like what I did. I knew that I wasn't going to read a book from chapter 1 through chapter 25, and it wasn't going to necessarily sink in and absorb everything. So I had to find little tips and tricks, you know, taking notes and writing things down, typing and reading them. And now you're employing all those different learning styles to be able to absorb that information. So there's a lot, in my opinion, if you're going to be successful, that you have to do prior to even taking the promotion exam. So, you know, and then you have to think about how is it going to affect you emotionally if you don't do well?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to beat yourself up now because you didn't do? And I've seen that happen where guys are down on themselves. I had one guy call me and said, I don't understand. I studied and I did this, I did that. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't do well. You know, and I feel like a failure, and I let my family down. I said, listen, it's a promotional exam. If it was easy, everybody would promote. Right. And it's not that you did anything wrong. It's just maybe it wasn't your time. You know, maybe you needed to adjust something and do something a little bit different. Maybe you need to clear your headspace just a little bit to be able to get yourself where you need to be. And guess what? There's always next time. And the fact that you didn't do well in the promotional exam has zero bearing as to how good of a firefighter you are, because this guy is an excellent firefighter. If there's a fire that we have and it's a bad job, that's one of the guys that I want with me. Right. So it has nothing to do with you as a firefighter. It's just a test. Right. And not everyone does well on exams. You have kids, you know, that you might have a 504 plan, or maybe they have something that's, you know, that's preventing them from being able to comprehend what's being taught. It's not that they're not good students. It's just that maybe you have to find something different, a different avenue of approach to be able to overcome that obstacle to be able to do well on the next exam. So it's just, you have to understand that there's a lot of different moving parts when it comes to the promotional testing. And I think that's very important to prepare for. You know, aside from just reading and being able to make yourself a better firefighter because you're reading strategies and tactics and building construction, fire behavior, and all these other things. I mean, that's the other, for me, that's a more obvious thing, right? When you're preparing for a promotional exam, that's obvious. You have to know these things.
Yeah.
But how it affects you emotionally and mentally, that's something that you won't find somewhere written down in the book.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway,
And one of the key things I think you mentioned was that you almost have to become that officer before you get promoted. And that comes across when you're in your oral exams, when you have a panel of whoever it is, you know, other officers who are looking at you, trying to kind of size you up as a candidate. And I believe that if you come across like you are already that, you have those qualities, you exude that kind of, you know, officer material, that it's going to enhance your chances of being seen as a, you know, a promotable person.
Sure. Confidence is huge. You know, I get firefighters that ask me, what should I wear for the promotional exam, especially in front of an oral panel? And they give you an option. You can wear your class A's. Actually, they don't even tell you what to wear, right? So, but it's a pretty well-known fact that you either wear your class A's or you wear a suit, right? Whichever one you're more comfortable in. I always tell, and I've always done it myself, I've always worn my class A's. I walk in, I have my class A's, they're freshly pressed, I have my medals, I sit down, I have my cover, I put it down on the desk, and I sit down, and I look the part, right? So like you said, you acting and looking the part gives you, it, you feel different. You feel feel more confident, and it comes across as such. And confidence is huge on the promotional exams, just as it is on the fire ground. If you're giving orders and you're the incident commander, you're standing in front of a burning building, you're giving orders to the firefighters that are operating inside, on top of and around this building. If your orders are not, don't come across as confident, then it sounds like you're second guessing. And that's certainly not a place where you don't want to, where you don't want to come across as confident, right? Clear, concise, and confident.
Excellent point. And I think it also relates back to what you were saying about being a younger firefighter getting promoted when you're having to supervise senior guys who have many more years on the job. And now you're basically your incident commander, or, you know, you're supervising them on a fire operation. You have to kind of know, you got to know your stuff and be confident, right? Or at least know when to, you know, ask for guidance. But, you know, it puts that interesting dynamic of guys who have many more years on the job under your command, and you know, you're newly promoted. So that's one of the things that we don't think about.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I took a job as a fire academy instructor pretty early on. After I became a captain, I took the job as a fire instructor because, you know, I wanted to, again, continue the education and you know, be hands-on as much as possible, learning all the new tactics and techniques to be able to, you know, just you have to know yourself. And it's something that I learned in the Marine Corps, know yourself and seek self-improvement, right? Know what your capabilities are, know what your strengths and weaknesses are. Because if you don't know that, right, how are you going to improve and how are you going to work on those things if you don't know what you don't know? So yeah, I think it's extremely important to, especially in that leadership position. You don't have to know everything, right? I always said you don't have to know everything. As even now as a deputy chief, I don't need to know everything. I just need to know who to call when you know, when the, you know what hits the fan, and have the proper resources, right? Keep accountability of the members operating on the fire ground. But I don't need to necessarily know every single thing, right? You just have to know how to put those resources together and understand into the command to be able to make everything work. But you should try to know everything. You should work towards knowing as much as possible. Like, I don't know that much about radio communications as far as how radios work, different frequencies. All I know is I press a button on my mic and I hope that the other guy on the other side right hears me and answers me back. But other than that, I can't speak intelligently on radios. So now I've started reading and looking, you know, reading up on that, right? Because it's something that I'm not that well versed on. But yeah, you definitely 100% have to always try to seek that information out and try to make yourself more well-rounded so that you can, you know, be better as a leader and as a supervisor.
And don't you think it would make a leader more approachable and show more humility as well? Like with the radio example, if you don't know it, you know that every station has someone who's the radio whacker. So find that guy and say, listen, I need to pick your brain for half an hour. Walk me through this. And there's a dual purpose there, right? You're getting information, but you're also showing, I don't know everything. Enlighten me, help me, get me there. You know, so in addition to the reading of things, I think that's a neat way of showing your character to people.
Absolutely. Humility and honesty go a long way because you know what? You're not going to fool the firefighters. And you can, you know, you can act like you know everything and you can act like, you know, yeah, I'm the best. And especially inside the firehouse, around the firehouse kitchen table, right? All the truths come out. As I said before, I think we were off camera when we were talking about this, that, you know, the firehouse kitchen is like the great equalizer, right? That's where you have your, if you have marital problems, go to the firehouse kitchen, you'll find a counselor. If you have, if you need all your roof fixed, there's somebody in the firehouse that can help you with them, right? And if you're full of, you know what, they're going to let you know in the firehouse as well, because there's no, there's no rank in the kitchen, especially when the guys are cooking for you. So, you know, and every now and then I roll up my sleeves and I do the dishes and they try to tell me to leave and get out. Chief, we got it. But, you know, I always say there's no rank in the tank and it's time to do dishes. And these guys spent, you know, their time cooking and making sure we had a good meal. Then I'm all in. But that firehouse kitchen or the apparatus floor or wherever it is that the firefighters gather to talk, to watch football games or whatever the case is, right? That's where, if you're not a humble person and if you're not if you're coming across as someone that you're not, they're gonna let you know.
Right.
Well, Chief Al Prats, we've covered a lot, and I know we could keep going for another hour easily because there's so much more good stuff to talk about. So we may have to circle back around another time for part two. But before we do that, where can people find you? What are some of the things you might be working on or have in the wings? Social media, website, stuff like that.
Yeah. So LinkedIn, that's where we connected. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Also, at Promotional Prep on Instagram, is another place. We are running, some company officer classes and deputy chief, programs that we have coming up next month. And we started working on, actual fire ground operational classes, company officer programs and that sort of thing, that we started working on recently. Other than that, I have a couple things that I'm working on and, you know, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag just yet because they're still in the works, but, you know, there are some things and I think that I'm a bit of a glutton for punishment because, anytime something comes up and somebody asks me to be part of something or to be involved in this or that, I can't say no. My wife's like, you know what? You have the bathroom upstairs that you haven't painted. You've been talking about painting the bathroom for 3 months or this. And she's absolutely right. But she's like, you can't say no to these things, but you can't go and finish these projects that we have going on in the house. But, you know, that's just the way it is. And I don't think I'm alone with that, you know, especially if you love your job and that's just the way it is. But, you know, other than that, I'm just going to continue working with the unions to help develop our mental health programs, and try to, you know, work on that because that's something that's extremely important to me. You know, listening to you guys on your podcast and taking notes. I listened to Dina Ali and I reached out to her and I said, I didn't know how important sleep was. And I didn't know how important it was to take a nap in the firehouse. Now I got to tell my guys that they can nap in the firehouse.
You know? Be careful what you learn.
Right. She said, well, as long as it's purposefully napping. And I said, all right, well, I'll figure out a way to package that. But it's so much merit and just, you know, the way that it affects, you know, how you could fight cancer. And to me, it was just amazing to listen to the information that she was able to share. But you guys are doing a great thing. So I'm going to keep listening to you guys and I'll keep reaching out to you, David, every now and then when I have something going on and we're going to be looking at meditation. We're going to be looking at a lot of different things that we can bring to the fire service to be able to help the men and women out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to say I think you're the perfect balance of skill set and being a human at the same time as a leader, right? Having humility. I think that goes a long way as a leader. So
I appreciate that. I'm going to record that so I can send it to my wife so she can hear it. But a professional said this. My wife's a school psychologist, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's been a joy to have you here. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's always fun talking to you, Chief, and look forward to more conversations. Thanks for all you're doing. I think you're making a big difference out there. So we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Remember to like and subscribe. YouTube, Responder Resilience. Facebook, Responder TV, and Responder Wellness, Inc. PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms. And check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.